Commerce to order. It is 1:35, and it is Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to my Brookback Mountain friends. And you keep horses. I thought that maybe I misunderstood the movie. With us is Senator Seacon, Senator Stevens, and Senator Ellis. I'm Senator Bundy. In this order, we will be hearing SB 244, discrimination against acupuncturists, 222, protection of personal information, and two new bills, Senate Bill 177, practice of psychology, and Senate Bill 255, optometry, the extension of the board, and license endorsements. That would take us to Senate Bill 244, Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Davis has joined us.
Just a brief statement, then we've
just
got...
Just for the record, if you would, please.
Oh, Senator. Excuse me?
For the record.
Senator Wagner. For Senator Wagner. just a brief statement, then we have people online, and we have some representatives here. Can speak to the ramifications on insurance, but AS 21 only applies to employers not large enough to fund their own health plans, generally employers that employ 2 to 200 employees in that range, and only about 25% of Alaskans. This does not apply to individual insurance, self-funded employee groups, or excuse me, employer groups, government programs, Medicare, military, federal employees, or Medicaid. And we're told that the state has historically complied with the insurance laws voluntarily, but they have a different setup for health plans. So with that, if you want to have some further input from, I think Melody Melhorn is on for the state and other people.
Senator Seekins has a question.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Mr. Chairman, when I look at this, group health insurance policy that extends coverage under a group service or indemnity type contract issued by a health maintenance organization or a nonprofit corporation. Can you give me an example of one or two in the state of Alaska?
I don't even have my paperwork on that.
I'm just curious who they are.
There are probably somebody here that can give you a better idea than I can on that. Where's the bill? I was asked by the acupuncturist to just add their name to this, and I don't know exactly who those groups would be or how many of them are in the state, Senator.
Okay.
We have some folks from the Department
maybe they could have
insurance here. Maybe we could ask them to join us, and
thanks.
Might be easier to get the questions answered there. Frieda Miller? Melanie?
I think Melanie's online. Isn't she? Is she here?
Now that she signed up as being here. How about Susan? Suzanne? No. Okay.
I think Melanie's next.
Okay. Door. We'll stand at ease for just a moment. For the record, please.
Yes, my name is Katie Campbell. I'm the Life and Health Actuary with the Division of Insurance. No. And I think your question was who an HMO or a nonprofit
is.
A nonprofit service organization would be like Premera is the only one that we have in the state. We have no HMOs.
Okay, so this bill would only apply to Premera then?
No, the beginning section of it reads that it's under a health insurance policy that extends coverage on an expense-incurred basis, and that would be health insurers, so your Aetnas and everyone else.
Melanie's with us, too, if she'd like to add.
That answers my question.
We've had the question answered. Okay. Other questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Wagner, the information you've addressed now, is it going to significantly change the fiscal note?
I believe we got a fiscal note being prepared, but we haven't got it yet, have we?
Yeah, I think there's
going to be one from the Division of Retirement and Benefits.
Okay. But it will join the bill packet as it moves through the process.
Yeah, you haven't got it done up yet?
No. Yeah. Obviously, they'll address that in finance. I just wanted to make sure that it was in the packet.
Yeah, there will be one. It'll join up.
Any further? Yes, ma'am.
It goes to Hess.
It goes to Hess, but it will. With a fiscal note, it'll eventually be in finance. Senator Seekin.
Just out of curiosity, what will the fiscal note show? Do we have any idea?
Do you want to speculate on that, or should we?
It's a little early right now, but we believe that come there's up here a moment.
Certain. For the record, my name is Melanie Melhorn, and I'm the director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. We are in the process right now of analyzing what that fiscal impact would be, but there are some coverage areas that would be included, and there would be some offsets involved. And I brought Frieda Miller with me. She's our health benefits manager to talk more about the impact of Senate Bill 244 on our health plans.
I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Okay. And being it has picked up a fiscal note, then I assume that the president will move it on to finance, and we can address your fiscal note there. All right. Thank you. Any further testimony for Senate Bill 244? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony. Discussion in the thank you, Melanie. Discussion in the committee?
I guess my only question, Mr. Chairman, if I could, is trying to sort out what the fiscal impact might be. As I understand, some of the testimony I've heard and the information that's been provided to me by people in support of the bill, that this should save the state money because the acupuncturist application of their particular medical art has a benefit of being able to address particular problems with less expense. At least that's what I'm seeing in some of the information that has been supplied to me. However, I don't have any experience by which to personally validate that in my own mind. The only time I've had a needle poked in me, it was generally something that was injected along with the needle, so I don't have any experience. But it's a curious matter to me in that. When someone says that there's a more beneficial way to treat particular medical concerns, that we would find that it's necessary for us to be able to change the law to address those things from an insurance basis, and I would think that I was looking to see some testimony or support. Testimony. I see some letters of support, but testimony from the allopathic committee, you know, basically helping me to be able to rationalize a decision to address this particular medical treatment from the traditional medical standpoint. I mean, of the benefits of it. So I guess that's probably where my question comes, and I'm not challenging it. I just would have liked to.
We have a practitioner with us that I could invite up if you'd like to.
I've heard some in the past, but I guess I would have liked to have heard something from the allopathic community that say, yeah, there's some real benefit here.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any input from more traditional
I saw some support, for an example, from the Central Peninsula Hospital, which I think probably has some overtones there, but I was just wondering if there was some support there that we could use as we address this issue.
Well, this does go on to Hess from here, and perhaps Phil Sponsor could elicit some support from more traditional or conventional medicine.
That's not saying that I would oppose it otherwise.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask we go back and talk about the fiscal note for a minute.
Sure.
Since this will be the last time I get to see the bill. Melanie, the fiscal note that was prepared 2-7, is there, so there'll be an additional fiscal note that comes in then?
Let the record reflect that that was a yes.
Yes. Yeah, maybe come up for a second, please.
You'd rather have Frieda? Is that if you're giving me that look?
I'm not going to bite. It's Valentine's Day.
Hey, it's Valentine's Day. You can tell by the candies that Jane has given you.
I saw that caffeine and sugar, the two of the most vital elements I survive on. There's no question about it. And the question I have is, it says that by adding in the statement in the analysis of the fiscal note provided on 2706, it says adding this provider type to the list of covered providers under AS 2616 would not expand additional coverage for their services without a plan modification. So am I interpreting that to say that even if we pass this, unless the provider approves a plan modification, that it's not going to cost anything?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, my name is Frieda Miller. I'm the health benefits manager for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. The fiscal note that you have in your hand was prepared on that date. I learned additional information this morning after speaking with our third-party administrator for the health plans and found that there were going to be additional costs to the health plans if this Senate Bill 244 is.
Oh, I see. I might have missed that. So hence the new fiscal note that will be provided as it moves through. I see.
Yes.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Okay. And thank you again for your help. Further discussion? Ready for a motion?
Sure. If I could just ask one question. So it is going to Hess next, and they're going to, and then goes to Finance if it picks up a fiscal plan. In that case, Mr. Chairman, I'd move to move Senate Bill 244 from committee with individual recommendations and with the understanding that a fiscal note is in route to the next committee of referral.
Jane?
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. So 244 is on its way, and we thank you for your help. That brings us to Senate Bill 222.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll get that additional information from both sides.
And do we have some bill sponsors around, Jane?
Yes, Ontario.
I see Senator Dyson is here. We will set 222 aside in waiting for their bill sponsor and move to Senate Bill 177. Senator Dyson is here.
Okay.
We will dispose of this one rather quickly. Senator Dyson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for hearing this bill.
This for the record, please.
Yeah, Senator Dyson, Eagle River. And with me is Hess Committee aide Jason Hooley. So this bill we were asked by the administration to do, as I remember, and
177.
As the cynics amongst you might anticipate, we always are seeing bills that are related to health care And at their basis often is doing what's necessary to get access to third-party payments. And that's a little bit of this one. What has happened is that care providers who are providing very legitimate care for patients can't use, under current state law, can't use the titles that the federal law requires for them to get Medicaid payments. And there is agreement, I think, within the professionals that operate in this area that the language that we're asking to change in state law is legitimate and consistent with practice and professional standards. So what we have here is a change in a state law that changes who can use the term psychoanalyst, and adds them to the code. And if you want, we can have some of the professionals here. Somebody probably from the department will be able to explain that we're on the right track. And as I understand it, the department is actually in their reports that allow these folks to get payment from under Medicaid standards. They're already doing what the federal law requires, and what we are doing is bringing our code into compliance with what the need is and the practice.
Well, we'll catch up eventually. Are you aware of any opposition to these changes?
We didn't hear any, did we? And we had fairly extensive hearings a couple of days in Senate House.
We have some people available for questions from the psychiatric board and counseling folks. And do we have questions for Senator Dyson? Hearing no questions, is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 177? We'll close public testimony, and if the committee is comfortable, we can move this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Seek.
I'd move CS for Senate Bill number 177, has from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Jane.
Thank you.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Bundy.
Yes. Thank you, Jason. That now again will bring us to Senate Bill 222, and
they're out in the hallway.
If you can encourage them to join us.
Mr. Stain.
This bill is so simple, even the staff can answer the questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Stancliffe, and I'm staff to Senator Terrio.
For the record, Wayne Leedy, staff to Senator Guest.
And as soon as our bosses show up, they will appear in our place.
Well, I would you prefer, I have another bill that I can address in the interim if you would like to wait for the bosses, or if you're comfortable going ahead, we can go either direction.
Yeah, we can move ahead. I think the first thing we'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is in the packet there is a new CS version F dated 213 by Bannister, and we took up a number of issues that were brought before the committee, met with stakeholders, myself and Wayne and Senator Terrio and Guess, and we've included in this new version a number of, changes that the committee heard about, and we can start by going over those. All hopefully, right. By the time we're through, our bosses will be here.
Let us adopt the CS, and we can begin.
Which version?
The CS is B/F.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd Senator move that the committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 226 in the upper right-hand corners / Foxtrot as our working document. Yeah. You're 22, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and without...
Mr. Herman, I'll object until we heard the changes.
As he said, this bill is so simple, even my staff can handle it. Mr. Stancliffe, if you then would go over the changes to the CS.
I'll go ahead and defer to Wayne at this time, and I'll help him out if he runs into trouble.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think in your packets also there's a one-page amendments included in CS, SB 222 version F document that is a summary, might help us go through them. The first one...
Excuse me, so we're on the same page. It's amendments, and it says Article 1.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The first is a change to conform with California law regarding how documents with Social Security numbers on them are mailed. Originally, when the California law was passed, it was found to be a logistical dilemma for them, and so this change would put the current California language into our bill, which is proving workable in California. The second through fourth changes are in the section on Social Security numbers. The first change is to include law enforcement agencies other than Alaska's Department of Public Safety to put a temporary hold on a notice of breach of security while they perform an investigation. So including things like the FBI, other appropriate law enforcement agencies that might need to do that.
Your previous explanation was for item two.
Item number two, I'm sorry. Correct. Item number three is to allow for situations when collection or submission of a Social Security number is required under state or federal law. Item number four adds language to the Social Security number section to clarify that a business can require other forms of identification to verify the identity of a person they're doing business with. So, for example, a driver's license or some other way of verifying a person's identity.
This is in lieu of Social Security number.
Correct. Yes. Item number five, under Article 8. Article 8 is a completely new section of the bill. And it discusses and requires truncation of a credit card number on all printed receipts after a transaction. This is generally the practice now, although not required by law. So this would require truncating that number so a printed receipt wouldn't display a person's full credit card number. And finally, in Article 9, General Provisions was a section stating that this law wouldn't, when it's preempted by federal law, the federal law would take effect. It used to have the words or conflicts as well, and in rereading the bill realized that or conflicts is unnecessary, just the preemption by federal law is what we need in there. So that's the quick summary of changes that we made in this CS. We continue to work with the stakeholders and accumulate feedback from them and believe that we'll end up doing some more things as the bill moves forward, but have recognized that holding the bill while we continue to have feedback dribbling in would end up with no progress at all. So I think it's fair to say we've made a commitment to continue working with stakeholders as the bill progresses through the system.
And this committee's information, I talked to the bill sponsors and felt comfortable that there are issues they could address in judiciary that we wouldn't necessarily have to address here. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, with that explanation, I'll remove my objection to adoption of the new CS.
We have adopted then the CS version F. We have in our packets a letter from Thom Buzzard, works for Wright Services, that talked about how they use a Social Security number to screen renters. Do you feel his concerns will be addressed by using the alternate identification In other words, if they use a driver's license number, they could still screen for people with poor histories as far as rental potential.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. There's because there is one identifier that has become very popular and easy to use doesn't mean that it has to be the only identifier. And to the extent that that universal identifier is subjected to greater and greater abuse, industry is finding other ways to identify so that they can they're finding that it's in their interest to provide greater levels of security. It gives them a competitive edge, and so we see that transpiring throughout. We've also heard from the Department of Law. They have concern that state agencies should not be treated to the same standards as private businesses with regard to private information. And we have done a little bit of research and have learned that state agencies are in the information brokering business. They buy, they sell, they share, and to the extent that they resemble businesses that are in that brokering of information, it's a policy call for you as lawmakers decide what level of responsibility and accountability you'd like to hold them to. We're still talking with them, and we'll continue to do so throughout the process. But unless the sponsors hear back from you on the committees that they would like to relax standards for our public agencies, at this point we have not done so.
Second, please. I was in receipt of a communique from the administration this morning, and the concerns that you are talking about now are referencing that. All right, thank you. Yes, Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, on a personal note, that from that level, this bill comes to judiciary next?
Yes, sir.
I doubt that it would get my support either here or there if it did not hold the state of Alaska accountable to the same level it held private industry. If they can utilize information that would jeopardize the individual, and for some reason or another, private industry is held to a higher standard. Are we trying to protect the state or are we trying to protect the individual? And it appears to me that the person who we're trying to give some benefit to is the individual, not the state. So, and if they could be a leak, it shouldn't be sanctioned by this body. They should be held to that same high standard.
Just maybe it'd be of interest to committee members. Last fall, I guess, I became aware that DMV was interested in making up some budget shortfalls by submitting the information they have available, and we're looking for a $5 million sole source contract to deal with that information. And I guess it's just very, putting a little finer point on it, yes, the state is also in the information buying, selling, trading, brokering business, and it's possible for mistakes to be made at the state level just like they would be in private enterprise. Other questions for the bill's sponsors?
Mr. Chairman, if I might add a couple comments to your original question that came from the rental mm-hmm. person. It's our understanding, two issues. One, our understanding from the main three credit reporting bureaus that a legitimate business can get a credit report on someone without a Social Security number. And second, from the Department of Public Safety and others that do background checks, that also a background check can be completed without a Social Security number.
And it's my understanding the state is also currently issuing state ID cards, much like a driver's license, but not a driver's license, but they are an ID card.
Correct.
Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, I would tell you, since in my other job, we're in the business of analyzing credit and helping to arrange credit for people, in the purchase of automobiles, that we can generally find out the information on someone with no more than their name and their address. And that what will happen as a result of this bill will be that there will be I have no doubt that in my business we will change our selling process, even though we're held to high privacy standards now. We have to keep deal jackets in under lock and key that have credit information in there, that have personal information, and only allow certain members of that work for us to have access to that information. And that what will happen, though, is that there will be a greater responsibility put on the individual who comes to us to purchase a vehicle to make sure that the information that they're providing to us on a credit application is accurate, and with the understanding that if the information they are not providing is not accurate, it constitutes fraud and has a penalty that goes with it. Because there will be those people that will have locked their credit bureau report, who want to exercise credit right now, and merchants who understand that if they don't do that right now, that the person's going to get out of the mood 24 hours from now in certain number of circumstances. So it is going to have some other effects on the purchasing public, that being that merchants will rely more on the credit information that's provided at the point of sale, at the point of financing, with some other ramifications if the information that was provided is not accurate. Today it's so much easier if we have a social security number, name, and address. Boy, the whole world opens. The whole world opens. Without that social security number, there are a lot of John Q. Smiths out there. They don't always live at 123 Main Street, but it's easy to confuse some of that data. And there will be some ways for legitimate businesses to be able to extend legitimate credit to people, but it will be at a higher risk.
And with risk comes cost.
Yes.
We have a person on teleconference who'd like to testify. Ed Sniffen's available if we have questions of him. And Steve Cleary would like to testify. So, Mr. Cleary, would you identify yourself for the record?
Director of the Alaska Research Group.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, good, a little closer to the mic, please.
Oh, sorry about that. How about that?
Okay, we got you loud and clear.
Thanks very much. This is Steve Cleary of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, ACPIRG. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of Senate Bill 222 today. It is encouraging to see the legislature working together to protect Alaskan consumers from identity theft. Special thanks to the sponsors, Senator Terrio and Senator Guest. It's been about a year since the Choice Point Incorporated company leaked a bunch of personal information that exposed consumers to identity theft. And since that time, more than 52 million people have been put in danger of identity theft because of security breaches, according to the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. As you probably know, Alaska topped the nation in fraud complaints last year with 249 per 100,000 people, according to the Federal Trade Commission. Identity theft topped the list of nationwide complaints for the sixth year in a row, again, according to the FTC's report. So we can see that this is an increasing and very dangerous crime that consumers are being put in jeopardy of. Alaskans, again, according to this report, lost an average of $1,062 in these fraud cases. And the average consumer spends about 175 hours of their own time clearing their name after an identity theft. So it's really a problem that costs consumers money, but it also costs businesses money with these fraud cases. The two most important measures of SB 222 will mandate that consumers be notified after a security breach and will allow consumers to freeze their credit reports, minimizing or lessening or even eliminating the danger of identity theft. 27 states have filed security freeze bills, including California and Texas, which originally had bills and then have recently filed to strengthen those security freeze laws. There are now a total of 12 states with these laws allowing consumers to restrict access to their credit reports, with more states taking this necessary step to protect consumers. Security breach notification has been even more popular. It's introduced in 35 states, and as of January 2006, at least 23 states have passed security breach notification laws. And again, back a year ago when Choice Point first came out, California was the only state that had mandated that. And without that law, we might not have even known the extent of their security breach. So it's time for Alaska to take these steps to better protect Alaskan consumers. Other provisions in SB 222 will further shield consumers from identity thieves by protecting private information and assuring that victims of identity theft will be treated fairly in their attempts to clear their name. And again, I applaud the sponsors for taking the time and effort to bring changes to the law and make sure that it's going to do exactly what we want it to do. A sad story that's actually coming to a conclusion in Juneau tomorrow. There's a sentencing hearing for an identity thief, somebody convicted of this type of fraud. And the person whose identity was stolen was a woman who was on maternity leave at the time that her identity was stolen, and she's had to work very hard to get her name cleared. And it just illustrates the sad fact of identity theft, that is that it usually hits very vulnerable consumers, and particularly a lot of elderly folks as well. So thank you for your attention to this matter and for doing what you can to pass identity theft protection legislation as soon as possible, and I'd appreciate your support for SB 222. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Questions for Mr. Clary? Seeing none, we thank you. For your information, we have a Mr. Grove that's online for Senate Bill 244. 244 has already passed from this committee, so I don't want you to have to sit there and wait to testify when the bill is already gone. Further people that would like to testify on CS for Senate Bill 222? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Discussion? Questions, concerns?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Seekins.
Not necessarily big concerns, and why we'll address some of this as we get into judiciary, but I think this is probably a good step, but after I looked at this bill the first time, one of the things that I looked at, he said, okay, how many times do I voluntarily provide information to people that can be used as to steal my credit identity? And is the big threat being able to access someone's credit report? And while this is a step, I don't think it's the biggest step. I went, for an example, I just got back from Orlando, National Automobile Dealer Association convention. To rent a car, I've got to show them my driver's license. It has my Social Security number on it, my address, and my name. With those three things, you can really get into someone. You could steal their identity. Go into the hospital for an outpatient procedure of any kind, or your doctor's office. They're going to photocopy your insurance card and your driver's license. And it goes in the file. With that information, I have the three major keys I need to be able to steal your identity. Make a credit card purchase sometimes at Fred Meyer, and you're going to use your credit card. They want to see another picture ID. Generally, what are you going to show them? Your driver's license. Name, address, Social Security number is there. Someone can steal your identity. And while this makes a step in the direction of helping people not to lose the confidence that their credit identity is not being stolen, there are so many ways for people to do that. that are sophisticated. You know, I take your car to a parking garage, and there was a time when I could look at your car key, and all I had to do was look at it. I could go cut another one to start your car. Now, today there's 13 cuts. There were only 7 when I used to be able to do that. And so it makes it a little more difficult. But I know which ones open the door, and I know which ones open the ignition. So sophisticated thieves always have a way to seem to get through that. And I think that we need to, as we're looking at these steps in these right directions, and I'm not opposed to this, we have to be aware that there are so many other ways that are still available for someone to steal your identity, so to speak. Now, my wife says most people wouldn't want mine, but you know, it would be more of a liability than an advantage. But you know, I'd like some of them to pay some of my bills, Mr. Chairman. But the it is so when I look at this bill, I try to take a look at the effect that it has on businesses that regularly extend credit or help arrange credit. And I can see how it's going to have some negative effect on those businesses as well as their consumers. But it's not a negligible negative effect. I mean, it's still something that can be worked around in trying to help people to secure their identities. But I think we all need to be aware of just how vulnerable we really are in so many different ways. And the guy behind that Hertz counter could be the one that's trying to steal your identity. Or even the person at the hotel that I stayed at. I provided my credit card, and I provided my driver's license to prove that that was who I was that was using that credit card. That clerk could be the one to try to steal my identity or to utilize it against me. And so these are good steps. But I think we have to just have to be aware that there's more ways, and we need to inform people on how to protect themselves a little bit more adequately. Now, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I suspect what I heard you say was that the government can help, but people still have to look out for themselves.
Exactly.
Check your credit reports. Senator Theriault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Seekins, certainly the issue of identity theft is becoming more and more prevalent as people have access to technological ways of mining that information, or it could be just the clerk, you know, running an extra copy on the senator's credit card. But I think certainly we have to do what we can to try and keep up as best we can. The slickest crooks will probably always be one step ahead of us, and we may year after year be identifying the loopholes and closing them as perhaps new ones are created and open. And to that extent, I pulled out my driver's license, which I had to update within the past year or so. There's a blank spot here next to the driver's license number where a Social Security number used to be until legislation was passed by this legislature 2 or 3 years ago, taking it off of driver's license, taking it off of hunting licenses. So we've started that process. And perhaps the senator just needs to get a new picture taken.
Interesting enough, Mr. Chairman, I'm a licensed pilot, and my license number for my pilot's license is my Social Security number. That's how the federal government issues a pilot's license. It is your Social Security number.
It used to have an Army serial number, and it's now your Social Security number. And I understand that for about $35 and some semi-crooked websites, you can find people's Social Security numbers. Again, I guess we're in the business of trying to hinder, not trying to help that activity, but it's a challenge to try to close every loophole.
Yeah.
And, Mr. Chairman, for myself as one of the prime sponsors, certainly as the bill is contemplated in judiciary, we'd be open to suggestions. We're really looking to go as far as is reasonable, to catch up as close as we can to the crooks. And so myself and I believe my co-sponsor would certainly consider any suggestions that Senator Seekins has.
I wasn't trying to be critical, Mr. Chairman, but just be informative.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put on the record that I agree with Senator Seekin's statement about holding the government entities accountable the way you would hold a private vendors or private individuals. You know, since we're all telling personal stories here, you know, I bank online, I invest online, I pay everything online, and I went through an exercise to try to see if I wanted to see if anybody was brave enough to try to steal my identity, but I found it on the ability to get my information off a county tax roll that I had some property I owned in Virginia. I found it off a borough tax roll on the property I own in the Matanuska Valley. I found it off the Anchorage municipality tax roll, and I found it on the state tax, the state webpage for Commercial Fisheries Limited Entry Commission. So of all the places that I actively transact in money, you couldn't get it. But all the places you did get it, I did find it, was on a government entity. So I think Mr. Seekins is on the right track to saying if we're going to hold businesses accountable, we better hold our governments accountable. And by the way, a lot of those pieces of information that were available, I no longer own interest in those things any longer. But it's still available through the government information system.
I think the message has gone out that you'll have interesting discussions in the judiciary.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Ellis. Mr. Chairman, I agree. It would be unwise not to hold government agencies to the same high standards in this regard. I think you'll find unanimity on that point. I would expect so. But was there reference earlier on in the meeting to some communication? You said communique. From the Murkowski administration?
From Mr. Sniffen, yes.
Expressing concern that we might be moving in the direction of holding them to the same standard?
There was some concern that the state might, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I'm sorry I don't have that,
is that
with me.
Senator
Guest, it was addressed to Senator Guest.
Okay. If she could share that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Gretchen Guest, Senate CJ. Senator Tirio and I agree with Senator Seekins and Senator Stevens, and that's why we had put the provision in the bill. There is a 3-page letter from the Attorney General on concerns that they have. There are issues similar to businesses where they may have to gather Social Security number, but there are many instances where the state gathers Social Security number and doesn't need to. There's no legal reason for them to do it. It's just always been what we did, and we're trying to parse through those right now. There is also a desire, which we'll be discussing in judiciary, about civil suits and whether or not the state should be open to civil suits or not, and some other provisions where the state is concerned about whether or not they should be held to the same standard. It is our belief that we shouldn't differentiate between businesses and government. It's people who have our personal information. And those will be the discussions that we're going to have in Senate Judiciary.
So, Mr. Chairman, it was a letter to Senator Guest, not to this committee. That's why we don't have it.
That's correct.
Okay. Correct. It was a letter to the two of us.
As Chairman. Okay. Certainly, we can get your copy of that letter.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Senator Guest, if you'd see that the committee members can get a copy of that letter.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, committee ready to move the bill on to judiciary. Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill 222 from committee with individual recommendations attached fiscal note.
Jane?
The
CS.
CS, I'm sorry. CS for Senate Bill 222, version Foxtrot, from committee, individual recommendations attached fiscal note.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. So, 222, or at least CS for 222, is on its way.
Thank you.
That will bring us to Senate Bill 255.
Yes.
which was introduced by request of LBNA, and we have someone to speak to that bill. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Maher. I'm staff to Senator Terrio, the Legislative Budget Audit Committee. With me today is our expert on auditing, and that is Pat Davidson, the Legislative Auditor. On the behalf of the committee, we'd like to thank you and the members for hearing Senate Bill 255 relating to the termination date for the Board of Examiners in Optometry and amending licensing endorsement provisions for optometrists. Section 1 of the legislation merely extends the sunset date for the Board of Examiners in Optometry from June 30th, 2006 to June 30th, 2014 per audit conclusions. Those are on page 9 of the report that should be before you. Legislative audit concluded the Board of Examiners in Optometry continues to serve a public need and is operating in the public interest. The regulation and licensing of qualified optometrists is necessary to protect the public's safety and health and welfare, and further, the Board of Examiners in Optometry has operated effectively in adopting regulatory changes and supported legislation that improved its oversight process. So SB 255 accordingly asks you for an 8-year sunset extension. And just real quickly, last year the legislature passed some changes to the sunset process. One was changing the mandatory or the period in statute, the standard sunset from 4 years not to exceed 4 to not to exceed 8, although the legislature could go with any date they want. Also last year, we changed and added two more criteria to the auditor's job, and one, that's because sunsets are becoming less about eliminating an entity and more about measuring operational performance. So last year, everyone approved the two more criteria. One is the extent to which the Board or Commission has effectively attained its objectives and the efficiency which it's operated. And the other one was the extent to the Board or Commission is duplicating other agencies' work. The balance of Senate Bill 255 in Sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 incorporates the recommendation by the legislative auditor concerning licensing. That is on page 7 of the report. It's recommendation number 2. The auditor recommended the legislature amend optometry statutes to ensure they support current license endorsements for the diagnostic use of pharmaceutical agents. Currently, language provides for a single endorsement for both prescribe and use. However, the Board of Examiners in Optometry is issuing two types of endorsements. The first allows a practitioner both prescribe and use pharmaceutical agents, and the second type of endorsement allows a practitioner use only. Current law does not authorize the use only endorsement. Senate Bill 255 corrects this situation by adding a section authorizing a use only endorsement and also grandfathers in the practitioners that were given that endorsement over the years, and that's since, I believe, 1992. Page 18 of the report has the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development response, their support of the changes we're asking you for here. The board's response was on page 19. I read it a couple times. They recognized that there was a problem with licensing, but I didn't quite get how they themselves would fix it, and they perhaps maybe they can address that today. But our intent with the legislation is pretty simple. We want to change the law to make current practices legal. We want to grandfather license holders in and make sure we don't leave any practitioners out that could have an impact on the number of providers serving the public and hopefully maximize the number of practitioners that can practice in Alaska. It's my understanding that we have an amendment, Mr. Chairman, from the division.
Yes.
Do you want to wait for me to speak to that or?
Mr. Urien had suggested an amendment. I'd like him to explain the amendment and then like to have your comments.
Yeah. I haven't seen the fiscal note, but I'm sure there's probably one from licensing, and it would be no new money continuing this board. Those would be the receipts that are coming in. That's pretty much it. Of course, Pat is with me for detailed questions, and that Senate Bill 255.
Questions? Mr. Maher, Ms. Davidson? Okay, thank you. Mr. Urien, if you'd like to talk to us about your amendment, and we can review that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Corporations, Occupational and Professional Licensing. And we, of course, support passage of Senate Bill 255 to continue the Board of Optometry.
For discussion purposes, I'll call this amendment number one, move it, and object for discussion.
The amendment that I proposed, the amendment I gave you, put before you, was suggested by the board, was desired by the board. It's a very simple amendment that removes from statute the 24-hour requirement for continued education and allows them to do it by regulation, which is how we handle all of our other licensing programs. We don't put it in statute, and it will make their programs a lot more consistent with others, and we would ask that you would adopt this amendment.
And would we presume then that by regulation you would require an equal amount of time that was addressed here in statute?
Yes, sir.
But at some time in the future, you could adjust that if necessary.
They could adjust that if necessary for the various different segments of their profession.
Questions for Mr. Urien? Senator Seekins.
So, Mr. Urien, so you could set up your own rules and change them whenever you want to.
There, from the chair, Senator Seekins, they are required to have continuing education by statute.
Right.
This does is let them set those hours, and I don't believe that they will be any less than what they are now. But there are several segments within the industry, within the profession, that allows them to make that consistent. They do some now by regulation, some they do by statute.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious because if we were now by statute would be giving them the right to specify by regulation those circumstances under which the requirements of the statute can be waived. We're allowing by regulation for them to change, if I read this correctly, we are allowing them.
That's existing language, sir.
I know. I know. But I'm just saying, I understand it is. But in effect, we're saying the board may specify regulation those circumstances under which the requirements of this subsection can be waived. We are allowing them to trump statute with regulation.
I don't think they'll trump statute with regulations.
I just don't like the language is what I'm telling you. It looks to me like that's what we're allowing, Mr. Chairman.
We do all our other professions. Their continuing education is done by regulation as far as right. The hour is concerned.
And I don't object to that. I'm just, that to me, as if I'm looking at it, you know, I've learned to be suspicious as chairman of judiciary of language. And that language appears to me that they can just do it by regulation regardless of what we say. So we don't specify how many hours, and they can change it whenever they want to. I don't, if that's our intent, that's okay. I'm just.
Well, chairman, that for my language. Understanding is the board can't change it. They can recommend someone in your position change it, and you may choose or not choose to go along with that.
We go through a rigorous process to change regulations. Our process of regulations is almost as bad as yours for law.
I know, but I'm just curious about why then, Mr. Chairman, we wouldn't say why we're deleting a certain number of hours since we give them the right, we're giving a guideline and we want at least 24 hours, but you can change it if you find that it's necessary to do so.
To the chair, Senator Seekins, if you so desired, you could strike out the last sentence. It makes no difference to us. That's been in law forever, and you
can. Well, no, I'm not trying to argue with that. I'm just saying, if there isn't a statutory requirement for a certain period of time,
then we wouldn't need a waiver of that of that statutory period of time. That just
that's all I'm saying.
I'd like to hear from the bill sponsor and Ms. Davidson their reaction to the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ewing.
Mr. Chairman, just a second about amendments in general on sunset bills. We've been careful in addressing those because we don't want sunset bills. There's been some complaints of them becoming vehicles for too much. I talked with the chairman of LBNA about this particular amendment today, and because it was suggested by the department and because it was addressed in the audit report in both responses from the department and the board, he has no opposition to the adoption of it. The question raised by Senator Seekins is kind of a new one, and perhaps that last sentence going away might be a good idea.
Okay, thank you. Pat, please, Pat, any comment?
For the record, my name is Pat Davidson. I'm with the Division of Legislative Audit. What we typically see when we're doing sunset reviews of boards and commissions, having continuing education requirements is very typical. However, oftentimes there's no minimum specified hours. Typically, when we review with the regulations, what we see is hours and particular courses and that sort of thing. They get more detailed in the regulations than they do by statute. In terms of waiving the CPE requirements, as looking at that last section, in general, I would say that I've seen situations where boards have waived CPE requirements, extended illnesses, various sorts of things. So I would say that having a waiver of those things is not totally uncommon. However, it's totally up to the committee whether they not want to delegate that authority to the board or not. So looking at that amendment as it is two separate sentences, the committee could certainly say, no, we don't want to give the board that authority and eliminate that second sentence out of that amendment and deleting that section of statute, and but still granting the board the authority to set what constitutes minimum certified or continuing professional hours.
Senator Seekin.
Mr. Chairman, in that regard, I guess
If it raises your comfort level, yeah. Why don't you propose an amendment to the amendment and strike that last sentence?
I'm going to do that. I'm going to propose that we amend amendment number one by striking the last sentence, that sentence which reads, the board may specify by regulation those circumstances under which the requirements of this subsection may be waived. Since we've already provided in the first sentence that they prescribe by their own regulations, which could include a waiver under certain circumstances in those regulations of any continuing education at this point. Because if we don't have any minimum requirement, then the only thing we would be waiving would be the ability to require continuing education, which I don't think was our intent.
We have a amendment to the amendment before us. Is there an objection? Hearing none, we have the amended amendment before us. Are there any objections to the amendment? Hearing none, we have adopted the amendment, amended amendment number one, and we now have before us again Senate Bill 255 as amended. Is there further discussion? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Seekin.
I would move Senate Bill
number 255 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and with the forthcoming fiscal note. I don't have one in the packet.
There, is it?
Oh, yeah, I didn't. I must not have received it. Oh. With the attached fiscal note.
Jane.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator
Seekins? Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Yes.
Yes. So Senate Bill 255 has been moved from Labor and Commerce. Next, that completes our agenda. Thank you. That completes our agenda for today. On Thursday, our next meeting, we will address Senate Bill 289, Insurance. Now, there's a narrow title for you.
Sounds like trouble.
Senate Bill 253, Extending Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and Senate Bill 254, extending PT and Occupational Therapy Boards. Anything more to come before the committee? If not, we'll stand adjourned at 2:40.